Hello there, all you creeps. If you're one of the many new listeners, or even if you're someone who's been around and has chosen not to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, do it now, or I will forever haunt you in your home. That basically just means I will provide you with the best cuddling that you've ever experienced, and I'll probably do your dishes, honestly. You can also help support us all by giving us a 5-star rating on Spotify and by following us on our social media at The Fright Crew on Insta and The Fright Crew Pod on TikTok. I also just want to tell you guys how much we adore and appreciate all of your continued support, and we thank you from the bottom of our decrepit little hearts. Now, roll the intro.
Welcome to The Fright Crew.
What's spooky, you creeps? I'm your guy whose car broke down and needs to use your phone while you are all acting incredibly fucking suspiciously, Jensen Harper.
And I am a mysterious gal who has killed multiple of her husbands because she thinks that husbands are like Kleenex, soft, strong, and disposable.
And how the fuck did I know you were going to be her?
I knew that you were going to know that. I kind of wanted to throw a wrench in it, but...
I mean, you also serve Mrs. Peacock energy. We'll get
there. I was thinking that as well. I'm kind of just a little bit of all of the characters, but she resonated with me a little bit.
Of course. But we also have a guest. Introduce yourself.
I am your singing podcast guest, Brucker. Hey.
We'd love to see it.
We'd love to see that. Yes, Courtney. Well, first off, who are we, Courtney? Who the fuck are we?
We are the Fright Crew.
Always tried and true.
Alive and well.
We're here. Alive and well. We're doing well. Just a reminder again, this is our last big episode before we go on a month-long break. And don't
mind
us. What
are we going to do when we come back? We're not going to know what to do with our hands.
Nope. I'm not going to know what to do with my toes, my feet. I don't know what's going to go on.
Any of our orifices, limbs, the whole shebang.
Yes. But yes, as you guys heard, we have a guest on, like we said. Brucker from Autopsy of a Horror Movie, dude. Fucking welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and to be talking about one of my favorite movies, Clue. It's great.
Yes, dude. Like people around here know, we always let our guests, almost always, let our guests choose what they want to cover. And you threw a little movie at us, dude. So yeah, like you said, Clue. It's one of your favorites. But before we get into like our gush about the movie, which we'll start with you, do you want to plug your podcast and like talk about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my podcast is called Autopsy of a Horror Movie, and me and a friend of mine whose name is Orlean, we will we cover horror movies, sometimes TV shows, sometimes random topics, sometimes it's a commentary. We like to kind of keep it fresh, but normally on our normal episodes like this, where we're covering a movie, we kind of like to look at it at like an analytical sort of sense. So get into what subgenre of horror does it really fall into, and what kind of rules does it play with off of that, the types of fears that it plays off of, what's the message of the movie, based on the types of fears, what's it really trying to say, things like that. And for those that are familiar with the movie The Cabin in the Woods, we end every episode with a cabin in the woods trinket segment. So like what movie prop from that movie will we put in the basement in the cabin in the woods to summon the evildoers from that movie. So we have to have a good time and try to be a little smartsy pants about it. But Autopsy Horror Movie, be found anywhere.
Love it, dude. Yes. I discovered you through our friends, another shameless plug, Swapping Horror Stories, Lauren and Caleb. You were on there and I was like, this guy sounds super fucking cool. He needs to come on, and you were down. So here we are, and we're going to get pretty rowdy. We're going to figure out who killed who, but
yes, we are.
Yes.
Yeah. For our listeners, if you guys haven't checked him out, you know, Autopsy of a Horror Movie is super fucking dope. Brucker, like, you know, so is it just you technically, or do you have a co-host?
So it started out, so I've been doing this show for about 2 years now, I think.
Okay.
And it was just me primarily.
Okay.
Recently, and by recently, I mean within the last 2 or 3 months, I kind of got a co-host with me to do at least like part-time.
Mm-hmm.
By okay. part-time, I mean like, you know, like half the episode. She's on
sure.
with me. Sometimes I'll do other stuff because our taste in horror is very different. So
yes.
there's like definitely some stuff that she like definitely like won't like ever really want to dive into.
Okay.
That I'm like, all right, but like I gotta like get like my nasties out and just like I gotta like get into something really like dirty and grungy, like a Texas Chainsaw movie or
yeah.
something.
Ooh, yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. So, but I do like the whimsical kind of stuff in horror that she likes too.
Yeah.
Like we I think the first movie choice that was hers was Death Becomes Her.
Okay.
And
okay.
You know, we had a fun time with that. So
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
a good spread of horror.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, I've listened to her on your pod because I've listened to quite a few episodes, and you also have one other guest that's been on a few episodes as well, like The Menu. She was just on. What's her name?
Oh, that was Orlean. So that is.
Oh, is it?
Yes, yes. But
you're right. What's
the other
one?
Person you might be thinking of is Ellie. Yeah. This other
bad critic.
Both of them
right?
are brilliant. Do what?
Is her Instagram bad critic?
Yes, yes, bad.
Okay,
critic.
Yes, yeah,
yes.
I actually
yeah.
really dig her taste and stuff. So
yes, yes. Ellie's sick. She's
yeah.
great.
I was almost tempted to be like, yo, dude, invite your other like friends on, but that would be a massive conversation. So but we're always down for that. So yeah,
I'll
dude,
definitely pass it on to her because I know that yeah. she would be down too.
Sick. Okay. Yeah. I followed her and I've talked to her once or twice. But it was never to the point that I was like, hey, do you want to be on our pod? Cause I'm, you know, it's like, I don't know.
You gotta feel it out a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So yeah, definitely welcome to come on whoever. And yeah, like I said, guys, it's a super fun time. Like you guys are more of the, like you said, like I want to use the word like studious, you know, you guys go into a lot of the trivial stuff, which we do in the beginning half of ours. And you guys really do like deep dives and get very analytical, as you said. And it's kind of like, we all kind of have our place, right? Some podcasts do horror movies for fun and some of them do them kind of in the middle, like us, I'd say, Courtney. And then like you, I feel you're a little more serious about it, but in a good way. I hope you don't take that as a
no.
I'm fucking out of here, dude.
He's like,
no,
yeah.
No,
so
I
just hopped
that.
On here for why.
No. I totally appreciate it. And you're not the first person to tell me that either.
Yeah.
And that's kind of was, I mean, you know, we have a good time. We make jokes and everything too, but yeah, I don't know. You know how like you, when I'm sure like when y'all were making Fright Crew, you know, in the very early days of it, you were kind of, you know, you had your vision board of like, you know, how you wanted the look and feel and the tone of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was making Autopsy, I was still in grad school. So I was kind of like always like reading papers, like always like analyzing stuff and everything. And then that's like kind of when I realized I loved horror movies, like mm-hmm. was when I was in grad school, because I like, I've always been like interested in the macabre and,
yeah.
you know, had like a morbid curiosity, but like never really fully explored it. It wasn't until like grad school, I was like, oh shit, there's like essays on like horror movies. And like, there's like really deep meanings to all this stuff. And that's like kind of, I was like, that is awesome. And like, I just was just hooked. So yeah. I think that definitely played a part into my mood board for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that, dude, for sure. I mean, it's definitely fun to do. Look at the analytical and essay side of things, you know, and that's kind of what intrigued me in, because when we first started the podcast before Courtney was even on, it was, we were actually called the Spook Squad. We changed our name. We've
Spook
done
Squad.
A bunch of rebranding. Yeah. Yeah, dude. So we're the Spook Squad, and I wanted to do originally how horror films were impacted by history. So like our first episode was Texas Chainsaw Massacre and why Toby Hooper was so inclined to make that film and what it really represented. That ship kind of sailed. Now we just kind of do our thing. You know, we do our little autopsy as well. So, but here we are and stoked. So let's move on to Clue though, dude. I'm really curious. Why did you choose this? What does this movie mean to you? Gosh, man, I want to hear all the deets on why Clue.
So Clue from 1985, it's one of my favorite movies. And it's hard to like really pinpoint why. I think because like just like on paper, like this movie is just everything that I like. It checks so many boxes for me. There's a lot of texture to this movie, like the Foley art of like the footsteps that they have in this. I think it's great. The soundtrack is only two songs, but it's great. I actually listen to them all the time while I'm working. The original score that they have for this is great as well. The look and feel of the mansion that they're in is just great. Like, you just look at it and you go, yes, that is and like Agatha Christie murder mystery mansion type feel. And also, I think, you know, growing up, my sister and I, we played Clue all the time with each other. So growing up, that definitely like makes me think about, well, you know, me and her playing together. And I mean, like, there's so many things that I know we'll get into in this conversation, but besides like the texture of it, which I think is just great, it just like screams like, yes, it's such a Brucker movie. I find it hilarious. All of the wordplay that they do in this is so good. And it's kind of funny that they do that because there's nothing about the board game that says that this would be a movie that like does has like a lot of like word gags in it. And so like whenever it happens, it's just so good. And like all like the character acting in this, like just the line deliveries from like everyone in this is just so spot on. It's so good. Like Miss Scarlet and Miss White are just perfect in this. And to sum it up in two words, Tim Curry is great. So
classic. Yes.
I love Tim Curry.
Put
so
a
much.
Period. Yeah. Yep. Tim Curry put a period on that for sure. So when did you first experience this movie? As a kid or a little older?
Definitely as a kid. My dad had a lot of random DVDs. I seriously don't know like where his movie, because I like, you know how you kind of like inherit your parents' movie taste a little bit? And it's so funny that I absolutely inherited my dad's movie taste, but he like just doesn't watch movies anymore. But like as a kid, he had all these DVDs and we had Clue. And I would watch it as a kid and thought it was fine or whatever. But I rediscovered it in college. I was like, this movie's like fucking hilarious. Like, oh my God. So, just as a kid, just kind of grew up watching it and playing the board game with my sister.
Cool. I love that for you. Courtney, what about you? So we kind of already talked about it, but originally you said you had never seen it, but then you watched it and you said you did. Let's hear it, dude.
I don't know how I forgot that I had seen it multiple times, actually. And I just saw it again, like last year at some point, or maybe the year before. One of my friends who also loves this movie so much, like just as much as Brucker does, I think they probably would be able to talk about this movie for hours. But I think he had asked me, like if I had seen it, and I was like, no, again. And then we watched it and I was like, oh yeah, I've seen it. But the same thing, kind of what he said too, it is super funny. Characters are perfect. Tim Curry is an icon. I love him so much. Like I have nothing bad to say about him ever in any movie. But yeah, just watching it again, which I'm just going to give away how I feel about it. I think I told you a little bit about it already, but I really enjoyed it. It's a good runtime. I think it's like an hour and 37 minutes, which is perfect. And it keeps your attention. It's a fun story. Again, what Brucker said, how like with the game, you wouldn't have like imagined the movie to be the way that it was. But it is really funny. And there are some parts which we'll get to that like make me laugh to like the point of tears.
Sweet. I mean, when you guys both say that you wouldn't have imagined the game to be like the movie, what did you guys picture it as? A little darker in tone?
Maybe more serious, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, definitely more serious, and also something that has like a little bit more of like a little more calculated. Like you could like kind of see the steps, but like with the nature of this movie, it's a moving target, you know, because of the endings, the multiple endings. So it's like there's so many things going on and it's kind of confusing, a little convoluted, but it's kind of like done that on purpose because it's like the movie is a moving target. So it's kind of hard to piece everything together. So I definitely would have expected it to be more of like a true kind of like puzzle movie that is possible to be solved at some point before the ending.
Yeah, I definitely think they took the right route with it. I think if it would have been like a movie that they made these days, which you never know these days, they could be working on one. It'd be like an A24 art piece. You know, they'd be like, this is going to be super dark. It's going to be a mystery the whole time. So I definitely feel that, which could be interesting. But for me, like same with you, Courtney. I'd only watched this maybe in like 2021 or 2020, somewhere in there, for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And obviously this movie had been like super hyped up. And I gotta say one thing. One of the worst board games, in my opinion, is Clue. I fucking cannot stand it personally. And I don't know if that lends anything to this discussion of the film, but yeah, I don't love this film, but we'll get there obviously when ratings happen and stuff. But yeah, I
pretty much. How do you feel about like murder mystery? Like, have you ever been to like a murder mystery party or like one of those murder mystery like dinners?
Knives Out and stuff like that.
I'm very hot and cold. So we actually did one of those murder mystery parties for Chanel and I's bachelor and bachelorette co-ed party. That's what we went to, one in Denver, and it was like meh. And then, but I'm like, Chanel's always down to do one, and I'm like, okay, let's do it.
I like them a lot, so that might be why I also really enjoy like the movie and the game, because I really love like the murder mystery stuff. Because it's just fun to do like with your friends too.
Sure I mean, it could be depending on the friends and stuff.
Maybe we can do one on our next game night.
Yes,
we should. We should.
So, but honestly, typically it's not my go-to. I did enjoy Knives Out. Glass Onion was okay. I'm blanking on other murder mystery movies, but they're not my go-to. I don't know, something about... Okay, so Brucker, I don't know, you know, you've only listened to a couple episodes, you said. Our listeners know that I typically try to shut my brain off and let the story feed me information. And so in a murder mystery, I think a lot of people that love it are the people who try to figure out what is going on in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think we can all agree on that. Me, since I kind of shut it off, I just let the film feed me information. Especially in a... I'll speak about Clue itself. Some of the things that we mentioned, like the multiple endings, cute, man. That's kind of where things could be here, and they start going down. I really, really dislike the whole, but this is really what happened. I'm like, God damn it. I'm like, I watched it like a couple nights ago, and I'm like rolling in my sheets. I'm like, fucking stop. So it's not my favorite thing, but I'm a very big stickler on like timeline stuff. So if you like try to fuck with it, I guess this is my new, this is the brand of Jensen of 2023, is don't fuck with my timelines. Oh shit. But yeah, before we get too deep into the discussion, like we already probably are, let's get into some trivia. If you guys are all down, kind of closing that section out, and we will get right into
the brains.
I almost forgot A and B. I was trying to figure out something witty and I forgot. So the brains,
it's
here we go.
It's Courtney,
the brains in the skull in your head. Let's go.
Yes.
Courtney, I'd love to hear some stuff.
I've got some stuff.
Quite a bit of stuff, I'd imagine.
A little bit, yeah. I was trying to cut it down just a bit because I figured we'd have a lot to talk about and I didn't want to yap for an hour. But yeah, okay. So yes, Clue is a 1985 American black comedy mystery film based on the board game of the same name, which we've talked a bit about. Jensen hates it. He thinks it's the worst game ever created. So that's really, that was pleasant to find out today. So inspired by the nature of the board game, the film's initial release featured various different endings, with one of three possibilities sent to each theater. Home media releases include all three endings presented sequentially. The film initially received mixed reviews and did poorly at the box office, grossing $14.6 million in the United States against its budget of $15 million, but later developed a considerable cult following, which honestly seems to be the case with quite a few movies.
Yeah,
that originally were not cult favorites in the beginning.
Especially, it seems like comedies from the 80s, seems like if you look like critically, because it's critics from back then, they're always like badly received, but then people are like,
wasn't,
oh, I love like Weekend at Bernie's, and I'm like,
yeah, because wasn't like Rocky Horror Picture Show at first not received well, and then it became like one of those midnight
you're
films.
Asking the wrong person.
I
think you're right, and that I think that I don't know the date that was released, but that would have been kind of, I think, around this like Tim Curry sort of era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Clue was filmed on sound stages at the Paramount Pictures Film Studios in Hollywood. The set design is credited to Leigh Gobrucci. I'm so sorry. There's so many names I'm not going to be able to pronounce. Gene Nolman was, and William B. Margerand, with set decoration by Thomas L. Roysden. To decorate the interior sets, authentic 18th and 19th century furnishings were rented from private collectors, including the estate of Theodore Roosevelt. Cool. After completion, the set was bought by producers of Dynasty, who used it as the fictional hotel, the Carlton. So all interior scenes were filmed at the Paramount lot, except the ballroom scene. The ballroom, as well as the driveway gate exteriors, were filmed on location at the mansion in South Pasadena, California. The site was destroyed in a fire on October 5th of 2005, which is a bummer.
Yeah, that sucks.
Exterior, yeah, it is, because it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Exterior shots of the Pasadena mansion were enhanced with matte paintings to make the house appear much larger. These were executed by matte artist Sid Dutton in consultation with Albert Whitlock. So the film was released theatrically on December 13th of 1985. Each theater received one of three endings, like I said previously, and some theaters announced which ending the viewer would see.
Which is weird to me. That's wonky. That's crazy.
Yeah, like leave it a surprise, because that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's ballsy for sure. I think it possibly really that's... Like, it would be interesting to be able to, like, go see it, and you, like, see your friends at work or whatever the week after, and you're like, did you see it? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, that ending was crazy. And you start talking about it, and it's like, whoa, we're talking about different endings. What do you mean?
that's not what I saw. Like, did we see the same movie?
Right.
So the film was released to home video in VHS format in Canada and the United States in 1986, and to other countries on February 11th of 1991. It was released on DVD by Paramount Home Entertainment on June 17th of 2000, and on Blu-ray by Paramount Home Distribution on August 7th of 2012.
Are you a disc collector, Rucker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So do you own this?
Yes. I own this on DVD. And the cool thing about the DVD is that you have the option for it to select a random ending for you.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. That's
So you don't have to watch with all three. You can just let the DVD select for you, which
that's actually really cool.
I like
yes.
That is super cool.
It kind of gamifies it, you know?
It does.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely like kind of playing into that board game sort of Cluedo sort of feel for it.
So the home video, television broadcasts, and on-demand streaming by services such as Netflix include all three endings shown sequentially, with the first two characterized as possible endings, with third ending being the only true one. The Blu-ray and DVD offer viewers the option to watch the ending separately, which is crazy because that's literally just what he was saying, chosen randomly by the player, as well as the home entertainment version ending with all three of them stitched together. So in February of 2011, La La Land Records released John Morris's score for the film as a limited edition soundtrack CD. And in 2015, for the film's 30th anniversary, Mondo issued a limited edition vinyl pressed on six different colored 180 gram vinyl colors for each of the suspects. Do you have those?
Cool. Oh, no, but I need to go find them.
I know, I was going to say, you need those. You of all people should have those in your collection for sure. And then I just have like one little last kind of trivia thing, that Madeleine Kahn improvised Miss White's famous flame speech, which is super cool.
Yes, it is.
And then lastly, I just have my ratings. So I have a 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then do you have the Letterboxd, Jensen?
Got it. We got a 3.8 on Letterboxd. Awesome.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I had a couple other pieces of trivia to share, if you don't mind, Courtney.
I would love to. Yes, please.
So one of my favorite things about this is that, so you talked about the set design and then building, you know, they did the sound stages and everything. The entry hallway, the tile pattern for it is done in the pattern of the game board. Like, that's what the game board looks like.
That's cool.
And... I know we kind of talked about reasons why I like this movie so much, and the wordplay, the actor playing Mr. Body, his name is Lee Ving. Like, I'm not kidding. His name is Lee Ving. And mm-hmm. that was kind of like a subtle wordplay joke as to foreshadowing that he would be the first person to die because he's leaving the movie early. That's like the whole reason why he got cast for, in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then if you getting to like the colors of, sorry, I'm like nerding out here. Some of the characters are wearing like opposite colors to what like their game piece are. Like Mrs. White is dressed in black, yeah. Miss Scarlet's in blue. That they kind of went with like the opposites, but all of their vehicles are the colors of their pieces. Like Mr. Green drives a green car, Mrs. White has a white car, and so on. Mm-hmm. So just kind of like fun little sort of like details like that. Just, I don't know, escalate this movie for me.
Right.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's like cool to know that for like another watch around too.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I feel like those things are missed unless like you've seen the movie like as many times as like you or like other people have. Right. But that's really cool. I like that. I like when they do those little subtle things that like people will catch on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun time and then, for sure.
And then every time I rewatch this with my wife, I'm like that annoying person. It's like, you know, his name is like really leaving because of this. She's like, you told me, I know. But it's like, so, I have to, babe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're in generous company with that for sure. Yeah. What does the wife think of this movie?
Oh, she likes this. Okay. I showed this movie to her for the first time a few years ago, like 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. And she was just like, wow, this movie's like awesome. And how like we did like a rewatch of it like shortly after, because there's a really good drinking game for this movie. I don't know if you guys like to do drinking games with your movies, but that's really fun. There's like three rules, and if you have like a lot of people watching with you, yeah. It could be really fun because you could each be playing for like a separate character. So the rules are, at least three of the rules I can remember, are that everybody drinks whenever the entire cast moves to a different room because they are room hopping so much. Mm-hmm. You drink every time a character asks a question. And in this one, you can like play for certain people. So like I would be playing, say, for like Professor Plum or Colonel Mustard, whatever.
Right.
You drink whenever somebody does like because there's a lot of like kind of like groping and like people like checking out Yvette a lot in this movie. So like whenever you see your character or someone else's character like groping or checking out Yvette, you have to like call it out or whatever, and then drinks. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna be sloshed by the end of the night for sure.
I was gonna say I'm gonna be getting my stomach pumped.
Yeah, I got pretty sick that one time, but I think that cemented it. My wife went, "Yeah, this movie's great."
That's awesome, dude. Speaking of ratings, too, I pulled up your activity on this film, man. You have some explaining to do, sir. We've got September 2020, a 4.5, but then every time after that, 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I went.
What happened?
I went. Who am I kidding?
Jensen has the receipts available. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
No, yeah. I went, who am I kidding? It's a 5. Like I don't need to.
That. Yes, that is a sentence that. Sometimes you just have to hit the button, dude. You just got to go, you know what?
The give golden it buzzer. 5,
bro. Yeah, I did that with Brain Dead. I can go back to my activity, and I swear when I first saw it, I was like, that's a 4.5 out of 5. You know, like easy 9 out of 10. And after watching it 7 times in 1 year, I was like, okay, just give it the 5, dude. What am I doing?
Right.
So I totally understand that. I fuck with that. That's awesome. Also, debating on cutting that because I just revealed your rating, but that's okay. We're living loosey goosey here. All right?
You can bleep it and leave it like a mystery.
Oh yeah, people. You're right.
You rated it as a bleep out of bleep, but then you did a bleep. What happened?
What happened there? That's funny. Sweet. Well, I do a deep dive on the director typically. So I do have a decent sized one on Jonathan Lynn. And Brucker, if you know anything about this guy, because I had never really heard of him. If you know anything about him, feel free to jump in if you have more trivia like you did earlier. So Jonathan Lynn was born in Bath, Somerset on April 3rd, 1943. He was born to a physician, Robin Lynn, and his mother, Ruth Helen, was a sculptor. One of his mother's cousins was the neurologist Oliver Sacks, while another one of them married Nicholas Samuel, who was the 5th Viscount Beersted. It's just like a political thing, I think, which is, it's just like a fancy title for England shenanigans. You know how they are there. So Jonathan went to Kingswood School in Bath between 1954 and 1961, where he then moved on to Pembroke College, Cambridge. While at Cambridge, he participated in the Cambridge University Footlights Club, which is one of Cambridge's most popular sketch comedy troupes, or troupes. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Whatever.
True. Yeah.
Jonathan began his acting career in the stage production of Green Julia, where he was actually nominated for the 1965 Plays and Players Award as Most Promising New Actor. And in 1967, he played Motel the Tailor in the original production of Fiddler on the Roof. I'm not big into plays. I've never seen Fiddler on the Roof. Everything that was mentioned, I was like, I don't know what this is.
Really.
Yeah,
no, it's my cats. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I can hear anything.
Oh my god.
Are they flushing the toilet?
No, they're just like aggressively fighting. I think they've stopped.
Cool. Okay. I thought they're like, oh my god, Fiddler on the Roof. That's my favorite.
I think at least one of them was saying that.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is that I know like it's a very like Hasidic Jewish musical, but like that doesn't take place during World War II, or it does take place during World War II. I can't remember.
You're asking the wrong man. I have no idea. I mean, I just kind of wrote the info. I have no idea. Yeah, that'd be something to look up for sure.
People write in to Fright Crew and let us know. Educate us.
Please. I'd love to know. All of our playwrights. So from then on, Jonathan decided to write and even occasionally appear in television sitcoms, including the comedy series Twice a Fortnight. In 1970, he played the Irish medical student Danny Hooley in the second series of the TV comedy Doctor in the House. Around this time, he also wrote some episodes for Doctor at Large, Doctor in Charge, Doctor at Sea, and even Doctor on the Go. Never heard of any of these. One of his most memorable roles in television was in The Liverbirds, where he played Beryl's boyfriend Robert. Another popular role was that of Harold in Jack Rosenthal's TV film Bar Mitzvah Boy from 1976, and also the role of Ted Margolis in Rosenthal's The Knowledge from 1979. Some of Jonathan's standout film roles include Prudence and The Pill from 68, The House That Dripped Blood from 71, Romance with a Double Bass from 74, and Three Men and a Little Lady from 90. Yet again, other than The House That Dripped Blood, never heard of any other ones. As for writing goes, Jonathan's first screenplay was for the internecine. Okay, let me retake that. As for writing goes, Jonathan's first screenplay was for the internecine project from 74. Like I said, he also wrote for television for the Doctor TV series and On the Buses. He eventually was able to write alongside Anthony Jay, where they wrote Yes, Minister and Yes, Prime Minister. Of course, he also co-wrote this film Clue from 85 and Nuns on the Run from 90. In 2013, he assisted quite a bit in the revived TV series Yes, Prime Minister that was produced by the BBC in 2013. Jonathan also has some books under his belt as well, two of them being The Complete Yes Minister and The Complete Yes Prime Minister, which both spent 106 fucking weeks on the Sunday Times top 10 fiction list. Both of these books were published in 1986, which that year they were both number one and respectively number two ranked books according to the Sunday Times. In 1993, he wrote the novel Mayday, and in 2011, he wrote a nonfiction book called Comedy Rules. This was partly his autobiography, but also a how-to manual for comedy. In 2016, Jonathan's play The Patriotic Traitor was published. This play is about the relationship between Philippe Pétain and Charles de Gaulle during World War II. I don't know who those people are. I feel so uneducated. Usually I'm like, yeah, I know what all this is, but nope, none of this, dude.
Yeah, this deep-cut British director, writer guy. Yeah.
I'm like, wait, what? There wasn't much else about him, so I will just sort of like list his filmography, which started with this film in 1985, Nuns on the Run in 1990, My Cousin Vinny in 92, The Distinguished Gentleman, also in 92, Greedy in 1994, Sergeant Bilko in 1996, Trial and Error in 1997, The Whole Nine Yards in 2000, The Fighting Temptations in 03, and lastly, Wild Target in 2010. And just to close it out, latest information that I could find about him now is that he lives in New York City with his wife, Rita, I believe. He has a couple of things that he's producing that he's working on as well. But that's about it for him. So nothing crazy, but Yeah, I didn't know a lot of his stuff, like those movies. I mean, I've heard of, like, you know, My Cousin Vinny, I've heard of. But even Sergeant Bilko, I feel like I've heard of, but I've never seen them. I've only seen Clue, so.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Yeah, outside of Clue, I am not very familiar with his filmography or kind of, like, his style.
Yeah.
I can just kind of tell from, like, the writers he had, though, that, like the humor kind of makes sense because they did, like, a lot of kind of like the slapstick kind of comedies, sort of type movies too, that felt very much in the same vein as this. So it felt like a bunch of knuckleheads getting together and writing something.
It really does. Yeah. It feels like you do feel that energy behind it where you could tell, like you said, they just kind of sat down and kind of played off each other. That's, you know, it's kind of like when you think of SNL, like how they write out the episodes and stuff. It just seems like a party. Mm-hmm. The writers, it seems like they have the most fun ever. Like, I'm a writer, so it'd just be so fucking fun. I'm not that funny, but it would be fun to, like, sit down at a round table like that and just vibe with them and just see what they create. So I agree.
Definitely. And it feels, besides, like, the comedy, though, like, it feels very inspired by, like, Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. Like, this definitely feels like the plot of this, I mean, it feels very much like And Then There Were None. You know, it has a lot of, like, the same beats from that plot too. You know, strangers getting together for an invitation, you know, for, like, a dinner in their honor. They don't know who the host is, and then we have, like, the reveal of why they're there, and some wrongdoing that they have all done in their past is mm-hmm. brought to light, and now they are not, now they don't know, and they're trapped where they're at, and they don't know if they could trust each other. So, you know, it definitely plays into a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's very House on Haunted Hill vibe, you know, that whole
and
thing.
It's called House on Hill, yeah. Or Hill,
yeah.
House.
Hill House. Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting. I caught that. So sweet. That's all the brains we got, unless anybody else has anything else to add.
Yes, this is, I don't know if y'all caught this, this is a Deborah Hill production. Deborah Hill of Halloween mm-hmm, was the mm-hmm. producer of this.
Interesting. Okay. So this was, it's so sad that she gets, like, the shit end of the stick with everything. Like, she was such a, man, like, if it wasn't for her, Halloween wouldn't have been created. Hello. So,
right.
Yeah, that's cool that she still had, like, a career, you know, for a little while and stuff. All right. Well, let's get into
the bloody soap brains.
Courtney Nicorgonis, really. Let's hear synopsis.
It's the heart, Jensen.
Did I fuck it up again? Bro,
yes,
fire
you
me.
You said the bloody soaked brains.
What is going on?
Yeah,
folks?
We're
going
to have a stern, you know, talking to after
I'm
this.
I'm going to leave it open because this is proof that we need a fucking month off, my dude. What?
Yeah.
I need this plaster. I'm going to get it tattooed on my eyelids. Just popped right in. Go on. Just read it up, dude. Synopsis. Okay. Let's hear it.
The heart. Thank you so much. Nicorgonis, our king. We love you so much. Smooches. Okay. On a rainy night filled with mystery and intrigue, seven unrelated guests gather in a gothic New England mansion to protect the anonymity of the eccentric hand-picked invitees, cryptic butler Wadsworth and well-endowed French maid Yvette have given them secret code names: Miss Scarlet, Miss Peacock, Professor Plum, Colonel Mustard, Mr. Green, Mrs. White, and Mr. Body. After exchanging the usual pleasantries to break the ice, suddenly the lights go out and bright red blood stains the manor's thick carpets. Now everyone is a suspect. Even if the equally suspicious guests had a motive and the opportunity to kill. But who's the killer? Could it be experienced Mr. Green, the seductive Miss Scarlet, or could it be the butler, the usual suspect in crime novels?
Boom.
That's it.
Love to hear it. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah. Every time I read his synopsis, I'm like, how many more words can you choose, my guy?
Yes. Can we write a shorter book next time?
Yes. Atlanta.
I do have to kick it off with a question. And I'm going to keep it super light, super loosey-goosey. What is your guys' favorite board game to play currently or as a kid or whatever? And please don't tell me it is Clue because I'll be upset. Just kidding.
It is not Clue. Okay. It's actually Betrayal at House on Haunted Hill. House on the Hill. Sorry. Betrayal and House on the Hill. That's my favorite board game right now.
I need to check that out. Is it cool?
Oh, dude, it's awesome. Courtney, are you familiar with it?
It sounds kind of familiar.
I'm not super familiar with it.
If you're into like board games, I think that you would dig this. So it's basically like if Cabin in the Woods was converted into a board game. Mm. So it's like a so basically it's like you and you know friends playing whatever, but you pick a character and your character has traits, and you are exploring this house, but the house is different every time you play. So because it's like tile based, so it's completely random okay. about how the house is built. And then at some point, as you're building the house, you unlock what's called a haunt. And there's like a booklet of like, I don't know, like 60 to 100 different like scenarios. And you unleash some sort of monster. And now you have to like fend, you know, have to fight the monster. And like there's all these tasks that you could do. And you can lose the game. But Trail of House on the Hill is great, great game.
Yeah, I've got really it pulled cool. up on Amazon. It seems pretty cool for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that box before when I'm like at Target or wherever. So,
yes.
What about as a kid though? I mean, was there like a favorite one other than Clue, or was it Clue?
Clue, you know, like me and my dad, you know, we put like Sorry, mm-hmm. the Jumanji board game. That was really fun.
Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I was into all that.
Nice. Courtney, what about you?
Candyland. Or Guess Who?
Okay.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
I love Guess Who.
The little flip-ups. Yeah.
Yes. Old Maid. Played that one a lot.
Is that a card game?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I love card games. Yeah.
I do too. That one's really fun. But yeah, I'd say probably number one would have been Candyland. And I just played it again on Saturday, oddly enough, for the first time in many years. I mean, my sister and my mom played it at like some brewery. And it was fun, but they like completely redid it to be more like modern. So the characters don't look the same.
Oh, that's
which
a bummer.
Is such a bummer. I know. But the game is still fun. It's definitely a kid's game. I think we got through like 17 rounds in like 20 minutes.
Fuck yeah.
But
do you still do the progression with like the cards instead of dice, right? Like it's the cards. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So at least there's still that part. But yeah, like the revamp of it, I'm like, why would you try to fix something that's not broken?
Yeah, at least they didn't do like what Monopoly did, and like, you know, they're like, oh hey, like there's no more like paper money, it's all like credit cards and we do all the math for you, whatever. Oh, at least it wasn't like kids don't like candy, they're like fidget spinners, and that's what it is now. Yeah
fidget spinners.
Yeah, I fuck with that. Speaking of Monopoly, that's probably like Chanel and I's go-to.
You like to argue?
Yeah. We actually have a Target edition of Monopoly that is really fun to play, just like two people. Shop for items and you just compete for who has the most items and money. It's fun.
Is there like a Starbucks in there that you can like go buy?
Literally,
something?
I think it's like a Target cafe because they couldn't use the Starbucks brand, but yes. Oh. And you have like little carts too. It's super cute.
That's honestly, okay. I'm going to have to like find that on Amazon because my wife is a big Monopoly fan. So that'll be hilarious.
Yep. Yeah. It's a fun one. Animal Crossing Monopoly is fun. I just like Monopoly because we also play like the one on the Nintendo Switch because it's like more streamlined and stuff. We play with like friends and shit. Sweet. Well, time to get in some notes. Let's do this. My first note, I guess one good thing about this movie is that I've forgotten who the killer was and what they used. literally, even though I just watched it a few years ago, I had already forgotten what happened in the end. So there's that. So it takes place in 1954 in New England. And Wadsworth, the butler, kind of going around the mansion, making sure everything's good for the evening shenanigans. And Colonel Mustard is the first to show up. There's a lot of like physical gags, and some of them are hit or miss for me. Wadsworth like stepping in the dog shit is kind of a miss for me, but I get it. Like, it's funny. Everyone that shows up to the house keeps smelling shit and kind of turning a blind eye to
like
him.
Checking the bottoms of their shoes.
Yeah, they're like, what the fuck? Even Yvette, she's like checking her shoes.
It's an extremely subtle poop joke, you know, like, because, you know, you feel like normally that would be pretty, I don't know, in your face about it or whatever, but it's like, this is extremely subtle. Like if you missed him stepping in it outside, you'd be like, what are they sniffing? You know?
Yeah, true. You're not wrong. I mean, you do have to, I do like the subtlety of it, but it's still dog shit. It's still a dog shit joke.
Yeah.
Another big thing is Christopher Lloyd is to me, unrecognizable a little bit. He's just so young. I mean, I know he's just so young in it. And I'm like, what a guy, man. He's also kind of a gross character a little bit. I mean,
they made him very pervy. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the point of it is that everyone's problematic in a sense, but do I want to spend a day with him, Professor Plum, or Mrs. White? I'll be a bottom all day for Mrs. White. Just subdue me, do whatever you need to do, and then kill me. That's fine. But yeah, I don't really want to spend any time with Professor Plum.
Yeah, no, that dude was a creep. Yeah. That dude has murdered someone outside of what they know. I think. Yeah.
Yes.
He was very quick to pick up a hitchhiker. Yeah.
Yeah. And in one of the quotes that I have, I think the only quote I wrote down was, why is the car stopped? It's frightened.
That is a great line.
So a racist character, Mrs. Ho, she's not racist. The depiction of her is a tad racist. Tad bit. It's not. I'm used to it from 80s films. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to pinpoint every little thing. But even if it's like a favorite movie of mine, like Brain Dead. I call that shit out. There's some racist ass shit in that movie. So just pointing it out.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So she hits a gong once. Everyone is there. Time for dinner. And Mr. Green spills his drink on Mrs. Peacock. I think it was Mrs. Peacock. Yeah, I actually like Mr. Green.
It was Miss Scarlet he spilled it on. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I couldn't remember.
And he was like trying to like kind of like clean up whatever. And she was very much just like, don't touch me. Yeah.
Right. Well, because my next note was that he spills his drink on Scarlet now because he spills his drink twice. Once at the dinner table. And I think it is Mrs. Peacock. And then second, when they get to that first room is when he spills his drink on Scarlet. Because something loud happens again. Thunder. Literally, I think it's thunder or lightning or whatever. So Mr. Body shows up being all gross and stuff. He's just kind of a weird person. Everyone wants to understand why they're all there. They demand it. And Mr. Body I'll cut that. Is Mr. Body in the game usually? My clue players, my clue friends? Okay.
No, he's not. He was an additional add-in for this.
Yep. Makes sense. I was like, I don't think so, but possibly I'm just stupid. That's cool,
though. Unless I'm missing something. Yeah, he's definitely not like a token character in the game. Cool.
So classic. What do you know? They cannot escape the house. It's all locked up. Stuff like window bars on the windows.
On the windows and all the doors are locked. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And. I'll go back to like when you were gushing about it, Brucker, is that, you know, you said you like love the look of the house and stuff. I do like that. If this was a house that you could go to and play this, like say you walk in the door and you get handed, it's like Clue, like you're playing Clue, like they hand you, oh, you're actually the killer. That would be pretty fucking tight, dude. I'll give you that. That'd be pretty fucking fun. I'd pay some money for that for sure. And I know you guys would too.
Yes. Dude, I just want to sip on some cognac in that library with a fire going, man. I just want that so badly.
Yes. I mean, shit, you talked about the drinking game watching this movie. While in the movie, they're getting hot and heavy, dude. They're going down on that cognac for sure.
Yeah, there's that great like overhead shot of Colonel Mustard be like, anyone else wants a drink? He just spills it all over
the table. There's like little drips in the glasses.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just shaking hand, just fucking moving.
The dude's fucking shell-shocked. He's like, yep, here you go.
Yep. All right, so as for the story, I've only seen this. This is my second viewing. I was trying to write my notes and stuff, and I don't remember it from the first time. If I get anything wrong in the description of what's going on, please feel free to correct me. So essentially, they're all being blackmailed. They all have like secrets. So Professor Plum did some bad stuff with his female patients, as we said. Mrs. Peacock has a story to hide about something happened in a bathroom with somebody, and her husband is a politician. Scarlet had sex with Colonel Mustard because she's like a sex worker, I think.
She's a madam. So she like operates a prostitute ring in DC.
Okay, so is it implied
house, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. Is it implied that she was the one that had sex with him, or that she just has photos of Colonel Mustard having sex with a woman at her house?
She has photos of him sleeping with one of like her girls.
Oh, okay. So Scarlett's pretty clean then. Okay, never mind. Not that having sex as a never mind. Cut.
Like, see, that's one of the things we were talking about.
Yeah. So Mrs. White's husband has died under suspicious circumstances, and later we find out more than one. Mr. Green is gay, and he says that if it gets out, he will lose his job as a politician. Which is sad. So 80s. I'm like, wow, dude.
I know.
It is.
And Mr. Body is revealed to be the one blackmailing all of them, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm like, did I get all that right, dude?
And there's a lot of characters.
It is.
A lot of backstories.
With Mrs. Peacock, because that one was confusing to me too. Yeah. So her husband is a politician, and she was taking bribes from people to sway his votes on stuff.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard something about a bathroom, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. So
that's like where like the money exchange would happen.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, my next note was, bro, the scale of Mrs. White probably killing her past two husbands to Mr. Green being fucking gay. That's quite the wide scale of problematic things.
Yeah. And then also Wadsworth, his wife just being friends with socialists, not even being a socialist herself. She just associated with socialists.
That reveal, dude, near the end, I was like, or like in the middle, I was like, oh, man.
Yes.
It's funny to see a 80s film, well, a 50s storyline depicted in an late 80s film or mid 80s film. It's wild. And being in 2023.
It's interesting because like The Room acts like more viscerally to his wife being friends with socialists than even Mr. Green being gay.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of interesting, like where like their priorities were on things like that. Cause like,
yeah,
it does suck that like him being gay has to be a secret for him to keep his job and everything. Yeah. But like, they kind of treat it like, it's not like it's not too, I'm like, they do like one or two jokes about it, but like, it's, Like they don't shun him from like the rest of like, no, like none of the characters like start shunning him from the movie or anything like that.
I do agree with that. Yeah. They don't like automatically discount his opinions on things. They just kind of, like you said, there's a couple small jokes in there. I forget one of them that was really gross, but
yeah. Like one of them was like, you know, he says like, I'm a plant. He says, I thought they called you fruits or something like that.
I thought they called you a fruit.
Yeah, but I think one that I actually liked that was pretty funny about him was when they're all trying to like split up and Yvette's like, who will go with me to the attic? And like the two dudes like, I will. He's like, I'm not interested. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then guess who gets to go with her?
Yes.
So Mr. Body gives them all weapons and he tells them to kill Wadsworth. He turns out the lights and a gunshot is fired. And when the lights are turned back on, Mr. Body is dead. Instantly, they're all on the case. They're ready. They've got their flashlights and their pens and paper out, you know?
Yes.
They're ready, dude, finding all the clues. So they then hear Yvette screaming in another room. She says that one of them is the killer, of course, kind of setting up our dynamic.
Yeah, and she's worried about the cognac being poisoned because she was drinking it too.
So Wadsworth says that his wife died by suicide and he blames Mr. Body anyway, so he actually had a plan to have the police show up to get him taken off to jail because of the blackmailing that he was doing. I think this is one of my issues, is with the questioning I'm doing of my notes when I literally just watched the film. I'm like, am I getting this right? And I think that's like a flaw to me, that I'm like almost confused. There's so many switcheroos that I'm just like, what's happening?
And it is confusing because then the movie in the last 15 minutes or so decides to replay itself again. So it's kind of like, whoa, when did this stuff happen?
Yep. So now they blame the cook, Mrs. Ho. She's already dead, though. She's got a dagger in her back. They all start pointing fingers at each other, just like the board game. This is sort of where the movie loses me a bit. Like I said, it's when it's kind of like watching people act out the board game, which I guess is the point. But it's just kind of a little boring to me because I get lost in all the finger pointing and the blaming. And I think the point of which it actually is okay is that the dialogue is written well enough that it keeps it interesting enough to finish out the film. I'll say that for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, like the dialogue. I mean, I think that there's like tons of lines from this movie that are so good. Like when the kind of like the it's a little bit before the finger pointing, but it's like during the blackmailing stuff, and like they're kind of all judging each other and everything. Right. And I don't know. We get that great. There's like two great. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent. There's two great line deliveries in that room, with Miss Scarlet when she's Miss White when she's looking at the negatives of Colonel Mustard, and she's like, how can someone get in that position? And Professor Bones like, I'll show you. She just goes, get off me. It's line. It's so good. She does it so well. And then I can't remember if this is at this point or if it's later on when they're back in the room, but Yvette is still with those negatives, and Yvette, Miss Scarlet says, like, Yvette, do you want to take a look at the negative? She goes, no, I am a lady. And she goes, well, what do you know? She goes, what do you know? How do you know what kind of pictures they are? You are such a lady. I just love like how much she's like not taking her judgment. It's just so good. But yeah. During the, I think, because you were just talking about them finding Mrs. or the cook murdered, there is this great detail, and it's like the only kind of clue in the movie we get about like who could possibly be doing something. Is when they go and check on Yvette from her screaming, the only person missing is Miss Peacock. She's missing from that room. So that in one of the endings that explains that she was the one that killed the cook. And so you get to see like that detail there, but I wish that there was just a little bit more of that as one criticism of the movie. I wish there was more clues in their clue movie. Yeah.
I think it would be kind of interesting if they could do more implanting of kind of like gamifying it, you know, if it's based off this board game that's iconic for you having to pen and paper, write down essentially what you think is going on and getting small hints after time, that's the perfect grounds for a film to do that and like give you those little things. And yes, Mrs. Peacock not being there is hard to notice because they're all kind of standing in a doorway anyway. So like if your brain misses that information, you kind of just let it go because you're like, well, there's so many characters to keep track of and stuff, and it gets a little complicated. So, you know, because if you think about the board game, there's no butler, there's no maid, there's no cook. So I think they added those into the movie for body count, and I understand that, but it does make it a little that much harder to keep track of the characters to help you like figure it out, which is part of the fun of Clue.
I feel like they kind of do that for like a reason as well, so it's not something that like is easily caught on to, because like Clue the board game is like quote unquote like a children's game versus like this movie is like more geared towards adults. So I think like making it like an easy thing to catch on to certain things maybe wasn't their
their mission,
like, really. Their mission, and it was more so something that was like not as easily caught on to and something that would take more like effort to keep track of.
Well, I also think, Courtney, that like, because like what you said, that there is a purpose to it, I think there's kind of like possibly two reasons for it, and I don't know, like, now's the time to like get into that, but like I definitely think that like with this being adapted from a board game and, you know, when you play a board game, there's a different outcome every time. So I think it's like definitely like in that vein of like, you know, you don't know who's going to win this time you play it or whatever kind of thing. So I feel like it's kind of getting into that vibe.
Yeah.
So Mr. Body's body has moved and somehow the body is like propped up and it like, quote unquote, attacks Mrs. Peacock. Mm-hmm. And it also has new injuries as well. So kind of a funny gag. He's like kind of like a zombie, you know, and everyone's like, he's attacking her.
That would be fucking terrifying, though. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Suck.
Yeah.
Yes. It's also just that Professor Plum is a horrible doctor.
Yes. They should make someone should make a Letterboxd list of all the movies that have a character who's actually dead, but is reanimated in the same way that he is.
Yep.
Because that's such a classic thing in movies when they do that. I love that.
Yeah, it's so good. And then they have that whole like funny joke like, what is it? There's no body. Okay. No, Mr. Body's bodies is gone. There's no body. I don't know. It's just good.
It is. Like, it's so like witty.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get to like Mrs. Peacock. So it's like, Jesus, I'm exhausted. What's happening?
That's
giving my energy. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh man. So they collect all the weapons and lock them in a drawer and they're going to throw the key outside. But when they open the door, there's a man whose car broke down, Jensen, who needs to use the phone. And they're progressively getting drunker and drunker too. They're talking about the dude thinking he might be suspicious of all of them when they're literally all screaming, basically.
Oh my God.
Fucking Mrs. I know. Peacock, dude. What will he think of us? Or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow, dude.
Also, he takes like what, like an hour to make a phone call? Like, he's in there for a while. I mean, I know they lock him in there, but like, yeah, they cut to him, yeah, still on the phone, you know?
Yeah, I think it was the whole pretense of, they even like discussed it for a second, like, should we let him like stay here for a second? And I think Professor Plum says, well, God, it's pouring rain outside or whatever. So,
yeah.
So in the next little scene, they draw like straws, kind of, you know, they pull matchsticks. They end up in pairs to search the house, splitting up, classic trope. So there's a while where everyone's searching around the house, and we see that the cop has shown up to the house, the cop that was called earlier. And then Scarlet and Colonel Mustard find that dude who needed to use the phone's dead body. Jensen's dead body. Yvette gets the gun and is shooting doors and shit. It's pretty wild. So like, Yvette is this like busty maid who's just like a bumbling idiot kind of. I like her character kind of. Does that make sense? Are we on the same boat?
Yeah, I mean, she is kind of, she's a floater. Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, she's kind of there for comedic relief.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, she is funny in some stuff, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, especially when she is shooting, and Colonel Mustard I just love him. He's like, they're shooting at us. I don't know. It's just he is just great. And like when they're doing the when they're about to do, like when they're about to split up and everything, Mrs. Peacock is freaking out. He has that great line of, this is war, Peacock. Like, mm-hmm, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know.
He's
this is
got
great.
Some
but yeah,
lines,
yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how does everyone else feel about Yvette in this movie?
Like I said, I agree. She's kind of a floater. She's definitely comic relief for
yeah.
sure. Like
yeah.
in a comedy film, like sometimes they need that, you know, where it's like break apart the dynamic of the story where it's like, oh yeah, we're in a comedy film. I'm mm-hmm. reminded by someone like her.
Yeah.
What about you,
I agree
Courtney?
With you 100%. Oh, I agree with you. Yeah. And I like those kind of characters too. Like the kind mm-hmm. of like bimbo-y. I actually almost was her character. I went back and forth with a lot of different ones.
Nice.
But yeah, no, I agree with you. It's for like the comedy aspect mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And did y'all catch, she does this weird thing when she sits down in the study where she like kind of just like flashes her underwear for a second right before she sits down.
Yes. She like lifts her skirt up real quick.
So yes. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely noticed that.
It's like almost like
we could have done without it, but I'm kind of mm-hmm. glad they kept it.
Yeah, the director's just like, let her cook.
Yeah. I think she's kind of portraying one of those characters who's unaware of their, you know, bosoms, like we'll say,
yeah,
you know, like all that stuff and like how sexy they are, quote unquote. So they just don't even think about what they're doing half the time. Like mm-hmm. I said, bumbling a little bit.
Yeah. And yeah, definitely.
So Mr. Green shows the cop around the house a bit. In order to keep the cop from seeing the dead bodies, they have to act like they're, quote, having a good time. Yeah, that was a scene and a half, dude. That was pretty wild, dude.
I
was
it's like, okay. So good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like the curtain with the hands.
Yeah, for sure. And then Mrs. Wow. White is just like, I think there's like straight on just like macking with this corpse. Which leads yep. me to believe, is there a theory that's why she kills her husbands? Because she's kind of a, that's her thing. She needs a corpse to do it.
All right, Courtney, into the necrophilia. I support you. Just make sure it's consensual.
Yes. Agreed.
And then in the other room, it's Mr. Professor Plum and Miss Scarlet with the dead motorist. But the scene that they set up is that they're just getting it on and he's just there watching. Like, yeah, that's the stage that they set. And the cops are just like, technically not illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. The cop says they're having a good time.
Yes.
It's like, damn, he's really just letting all this happen, dude. Let this go by.
Yeah.
So the power goes out and Yvette was faking who she was, but she also gets killed too, in this timeline, obviously, by someone that we can't quite tell who it is just yet. Then a singing telegram shows up at the front door, Brucker, and gets shot. Oh, and the cop was actually killed too, quickly off screen, kind of, or quickly. It was just like, it just happened. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess he's dead. So now Wadsworth runs around the house with his entire theory on who killed who and everything. It's a lot. Tim Curry chews the lines. He fucking serves, but it does get a little, I can only imagine shooting that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Everyone hopping from room to room, just following Tim Curry, like willingly, just him doing his thing. I can only imagine was incredible.
Yeah. I can just imagine that, like, they just like wrote in the script and Tim Curry just keeps going. Like, he didn't.
Give him 20 minutes. Yeah.
Just to back up a smidge, we got to Yvette's death scene. Did y'all notice how she, when she's talking to whomever we can't see, she drops the accent? Yeah. But then as soon as they like reveal they're killing her, she goes right back into her French accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was odd.
Yeah. It was a choice for sure.
Yeah. It makes me laugh every time. Like, why? That's so unintentionally funny. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So everyone has more secrets. Also, I wrote televangelist. I don't really know if that's what this guy is. I think that's kind of the, whatever, a religious person who shows up to your door preaching. Is that what a televangelist is? I don't know. I'm not religious, so
televangelist is TV. So this is kind of
literally. Okay.
Yeah. So this is the closest comp is like Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, preaching the Bible, and he tells them that the apocalypse is coming. I do love Mrs. Peacock's response, and she's like, what? She's like, it's already here or whatever.
Leave, you beatnik. Yeah.
Just full sending it. So according to Wadsworth, Yvette killed Mr. Body. She worked for Scarlet, who actually killed everyone else throughout the night. And in this kind of ending thing, the preacher guy at the door was actually the police chief, I believe, or whatever, and they arrest Scarlet. But no, we get little cards saying that this isn't how it happened and that this is what really happened. So what, okay, where did you guys watch it, like, for this, in preparation for this?
Amazon Prime.
Okay. Yeah, I watched it on Amazon Prime as well.
Okay, so the only experience I could ask you, Brucker, is since you have that DVD where you can pick an ending, a random ending. I don't know if you've ever done that.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, let's say it's the ending where it's this ending where Scarlet is the killer. How does it transition to the actual end? And like, what does it do to the runtime? Does it make like an hour 25 or something?
It's shed by like a few minutes. It doesn't cut to like the real ending. Like, that's the ending you get. And it goes to credits.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Hmm. I could see that being a bit unrewarding because the true ending when it combines all of them or whatever, like what we watched on Amazon Prime, makes a little more sense, like that essentially everyone kind of killed somebody, kind of, you know.
They're all guilty. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. It's witty for a game based off you trying to figure out who the one killer is, right? But the combination of, how many endings are there? Three or four?
Three.
Is just, by the second one, my eyes glossed over a bit. But I get it. It works for you guys, obviously, right? So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it works for me because it's, I mean, I don't know, just because there's jokes in each segment that I like. And also, I actually kind of prefer the Scarlet, Miss Scarlet being the killer ending, opposed to like the like quote canonical like true ending where it's all of them. The all the one makes the most sense, I think. But I like the Miss Scarlet one for, I think, just because I like the idea of like they were all with one killer amongst them the whole time. I don't, it just feels a little bit more Agatha Christie to me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the second one is. I know it. Oh, now it's Mrs. Peacock.
It's Mrs. Peacock.
Peacock's turn. She goes through the same thing, gets accused, gets arrested. Guess what? It's not actually what happened. So I'll just go through the rest of, I only have two more notes. So the, in the final one, sort of everyone ended up killing someone for reasons. Mr. Body is actually Wadsworth. He's essentially going to continue on blackmailing all of them, but then Mr. Green shoots him. Oh, and he's also part of the FBI. And in this ending, which is the canonical one, I think, it literally ends with, oh my God, Mr. Green saying, quote, "Okay, Chief, take him away. I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife."
Freeze frame. Yeah.
Freeze frame. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God, dude. Which also is problematic because then he was just lying about being gay.
I know.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another, another reason to like the peak, the Scarlet one. True. Yeah. There was a fourth ending that I think was written but never shot.
Okay.
And that it was the only killer was Wadsworth. And it ends with he kind of like explaining everything and his motives. And I can't remember his motives, but like him explaining, you know, that he's been the guy the whole time. And that actually their all of their dinners were poisoned. So they're all doomed to die in that house. And he leaves. And then as he leaves, he looks like in the backseat of his car, like one of those Dobermans is back there and like just like mauls him to death.
Oh, shit. So, like, okay.
So it's like a really like dark ending where all of them actually die. Yeah.
Damn. All right. Okay, Wadsworth. Jeez, man. hang up the towel, bud.
Doing the absolute most.
Yeah, for real. Per usual. All right, go be Pennywise next. Jeez, we get it.
So good.
Well, that's all my notes. If you guys have anything else to add, please, now's the time. Maybe I missed a point or...
Well, I have a question for you because you said you were going to tell me how I was giving off Miss Peacock vibes, but you didn't.
I did tell you that? I said I was going to?
Yeah, you said, oh, I'll tell you later. Or we'll talk about it later. Yeah, maybe.
I just meant like we'll talk about the movie later. I don't know. No. You just like, I think Courtney...
Is it because I'm unhinged?
Yeah. It's Mrs. White energy right now in life, right?
Yeah.
And then later on, when you marry a politician...
Yeah, not happening, but okay,
it's definitely Mrs. Peacock energy for you. I see.
All right, okay, I'll take it.
And yeah, like, she's, you know, at least the women aren't problematic as much, I mean, except for Mrs. White being, you know, a killer, but at least it's not as bad as like Professor Plum. Like, I don't want to have the energy of any of these guys, really. Maybe Wadsworth, right, Brucker? Like, maybe.
Yeah, maybe Wadsworth or Mr. Green. Mr. Green seems to be kind of like the only, like, person, like, good person, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'll accept that. But
yeah, I guess, except for the whole, like, faking to be gay. See, that's like the weird thing about that ending is, like, so, like, was he faking being a homosexual the whole, like outside of this evening?
Right. Or, like, he's undercover.
Mm-hmm. Or did he just say that so it Wadsworth didn't read what his actual blackmailing thing was for, and because maybe it was like something worse, or maybe he was even invited and Wadsworth would have been like, oh shit, excuse me, but this is embarrassing, but I don't know your name and I don't know why you're being blackmailed. Can you tell me which misgivings did you do? So that's like the, I guess, one weird wrinkle about him.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, overall, it's a fun time and I'm very excited to hear everybody's ratings just to see where we all kind of stand in the numbers realm. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, maybe this is kind of one of those classic movies. I feel like if I would have seen as a kid, I might be a little more fond of it. I'll admit that, because the comedy is a little harder to grasp. Comedy's hard, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like watching like a 1960s horror film. and you're just like, yo, this is so fucking problematic. Like Tombs of the Blind Dead, Courtney, from 1970 something.
Yeah.
Bro, like just total rape out in the middle of nowhere. Like it sucks to see that stuff. And like, yeah, we don't need it. We do not need it. And I think a lot of the comedy that happens with comedy films as well is they can kind of get past in time where, you know, I mean, like everybody talks, like I love The Office. It's one of my favorite shows. Everybody talks about how nowadays the show couldn't be made. And I understand that. So yeah, I guess that's my rant and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. No,
we'll take it.
The comedy, this is good. Cause like it is, you know, it is a mixture between like the wordplay stuff, but like there's also like some like physical gags in this that like work really well, I think. Mm-hmm. Like the one that gets me every fucking, like it just has me crying laughing, is when Wadsworth is in the dark and he's trying to find the door. He grabs what he thinks is a doorknob, but it's actually the knob for a shower, and he just turns a shower on.
I didn't even catch that.
Oh my God. I die laughing every time that happens. And then he's just wet for the rest of the movie. But nobody questions it. Nobody asks him what happened. That they just accept he's wet. I don't know. It's just kind of funny.
I thought maybe he went out into the rain and I was writing notes and I missed it. But okay, that's what I missed. I was like, why is he just dripping, dude?
it's when they're all separated, and I think somebody gets killed, and Miss White just starts screaming. He's like, I'll get to you, here I come. Oh God, it's great. But you know, like you said, the comedy is hard, and I did feel it this time on this rewatch, was that for some of the wordy jokey joke gags or whatever, I did almost feel like that there's like these pregnant pauses where it's like, if this was like a sitcom, that's where like the studio audience laugh would come in. So it did kind of feel like they're like, was like, all right, let's be sure we give them time to like recover from that joke. Cause you know,
right.
And then move on. So I did kind of feel like, oh, they think that this is probably a little bit funnier than what it actually is in some points. So if you don't mind, I kind of had like a question I wanted to pose to y'all, and it's kind of getting away from the comedy. And earlier I kind of mentioned how like I feel like the ending of this movie, with it having three endings, that is maybe kind of playing into, and I'm stealing a segment from my own show, kind of like the messaging or like just any sort of kind of like underlying interpretation you have from this. So I kind of like want to get, and I don't have an answer really for him. I'm kind of spitballing with you two right now, but this movie is oddly like there's this weird like American, or is it anti-American vibe in this, where like, you know, the superficial blackmailing motive stuff in this is like all about like communism and people like, you know, doing things with socialists or communism and things like, or like, you know, nuclear physicists and like, oh shoot, like he could be like somebody working with, you know, like the Big Red or something like that. Like the Big Red scare is all over this movie, but they're adamant about how that's just a red herring the whole time, which is also a play on words. Mm-hmm. But, and then they have this whole thing with how, you know, oh, well, if Mr. Body knew what they were doing was wrong, why didn't he go to the police if he thought that they were working with socialists or communists? And he said, well, he might as well make a buck out of it. What could be more American than that? So I don't know. To me, it's kind of like there's this weird thing, like they're all kind of portray themselves to be patriotic, but they're all like bad people.
Yeah.
And Mr. Green, I mean, besides like them like forcing him to be straight in like the canonical ending, mm-hmm, there's nothing about his character to like really has to do with politics or him like doing stuff with people besides that, just his sexuality. So it's like, and then with the movie having all these different endings where it's like, it literally could have been anyone. Is it kind of just like getting into how all these, you know, patriotism has no real justification. So it's like, it's all just like a big mess. Anybody could be doing anything and they could just blame it on nationalism or their allegiance to, you know, like their country or whatever, but like they'll just do bad things no matter what. And I'm kind of rambling and all over the place now, but like I feel like there's like this weird nationalism message in this, and it's kind of like saying it's fucked up.
yeah, and it is kind of, you know, thinking deeper into that, it is interesting to think that this is a British writer and director too, and that is their perspective of obviously Americans in the mid 1950s, 1954, which obviously every decade is a fucking contentious time, let's be honest. So, but it's, you know, and another point to make is that, like, Mr. Green reveals himself to be gay before it's pulled out, like everybody else is blackmailed or like their backstory. Mm-hmm. So that is an interesting thing. And I definitely caught some of that stuff. You know, I definitely think to get deeper into that, it would be like maybe one more rewatch and paying more attention to that. But of course you do catch on to those things. And, you know, it is a huge comment that was probably be able, that was something to be made in 1984, 1985.
Yeah.
That made a little more sense because it was closer. Now it's like a little over our heads. But it is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just, I'm just still trying to like rack my brain with it. Cause it's kind of just like, all these people are supposed to be like patriots and kind of like good people, but like, that's what they're showing up front. But really they have all of like these selfish motives underneath it. Mm-hmm. And it's a big mess of how like it, they're all claiming to be like these good patriots and everything, but at the end of the day, they literally, it could have been like anyone committing murder in this house. I don't know. It's like interesting that, I don't know. I just find it kind of interesting.
Well, and those thoughts that you have about it are pretty timeless in itself, because I think that's kind of a classic thing that we see today is the people who, you know, we get political on here sometimes, we haven't in a while, but the people who tend to be very like Blue Lives Matter, I voted for Trump, like let's go Brandon, people like that, they claim they're the most patriotic people, they wear the fucking American flag on every surface that they can, they have stickers all over their cars, shit like that, but yet turns out, and it's not always true, I'm not calling out people exactly, but like a lot of the times those are not the greatest people. You know, so yeah, it's kind of timeless in that sense that you aren't exactly voting for these characters. You're not really supposed to like them. And I think that's, that actually lends to Mr. Green's character a bit more now, because like I said, he outs himself, which in a way is pretty progressive, because they at least didn't out him in, you know, in the group, like someone didn't out him,
really, which would be
really uncomfortable. He outed himself before it just was leaked. And yeah, dude, I mean, you definitely brought up some good points for sure. Do you have anything to add, Courtney?
No, I, I was just listening intently. Cause I agree with you. So I, my mums in the background.
She's like, retweet.
Yes. Share.
Yes. Yes. That is cool though. Yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, it's kind of timeless, and the commentary is something that can apply to these days. And it is cool that they do that in there, because this could be a mindless film where there's no underlying message to anything. But like you said, dude, I mean, clearly these characters aren't meant to be loved, and you don't exactly like them, because you're literally being told like Professor Plum is disgusting, like a disgusting human. Mrs. White kills her husbands and like all these things, right? And so and it's funny that like a few of them are politicians, Colonel Mustard, you know, like stuff like that. So it's just weird how it kind of applies to current times as well, unfortunately. Jesus.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it's really eye-opening in that I think one of my favorite scenes in this is the dinner scene when they're all together, and it's when they're all starting to realize and connect the dots, like, oh shit, we're all from DC or have ties to U.S. politics, like, why are we here, kind of thing. So yeah, it's and that's when you can kind of be like, oh, that's when like I like first get hooked into it too. It's like, oh shit, like what's going on here? Are these like breadcrumbs? But you know, it's all red herring.
Sweet. All right, well, let's get into
the cause of who killed the death.
Killed the death? I love it.
And we always, I mean, dude, we have to start with you, of course. We're excited to hear it. Probably not going to bleep the earlier ones because it's obvious. You picked it. You said it's one of your favorites. Let's hear it. Yeah. Dude, what do you got?
Yeah, so you know, going like Letterboxd rating, you know, yeah. It's 5 out of 5 for me. It's 5 candlesticks out of 5 candlesticks. It's classic. I love it. I know I've been gushing about it the whole time, but it's a movie I can literally watch over and over. I never get tired of it.
I love that for you, man.
I know. I really do love that. I love when people get to gush about their favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when movies are 5 out of 5s for people. Like, right. I love hearing that.
It doesn't happen often on here. You know, I don't have a whole lot of, if you go to my Letterboxd profile, Brucker, I don't have a whole lot of 5 out of 5s. It's very, got maybe 30 or so movies under the thousands of movies that I've seen. So yeah, it doesn't happen often. So love that for you. Is this a comfort movie for you? Do you like throw it on if you're just chilling?
100%. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm not kidding. Like, you're going to think I'm a psychopath. I was like, this was a while ago, but I was just doing chores, you know, in my house.
Yeah.
I watched this 3 times in a row just as I was like doing stuff like in the house, you know, just like cleaning and house chores and things like that. And I was just like, nope, I don't need anything else. I'll just just run it back.
No, dude, I don't judge you at all.
I've got those kind of movies for myself as well. The Wedding Singer is one of them. And Jensen hates that movie too. Jensen hates that movie too.
Yes. I love The Wedding Singer.
It's so good. So Jensen hates both of the comfort movies. It's fine.
I don't hate them.
Okay, after this, I need to know some of your comfort movies, Jensen.
Okay, yeah, we'll get there. We talked about this last week, I think, Courtney, right?
We did, yeah.
The week before, yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to hear Courtney's rating, and then we'll get into mine, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to go for a... I'm like in between like a 3.9 and a 4. But because Brucker's on, I'm gonna go with a 4.
I'm gonna throw
that 0.1 in there because I think talking about it more too helped. And the scene where the telegram singer gets shot, that like makes me laugh so like I laugh to the point of tears. I'm like, how morbid that made me laugh so hard. And also when like Miss Peacock got slapped twice because he had to like retrace his steps and she just got slapped again. Those scenes crack me up. The first time when she's just like screaming and just gets slapped.
It's so good.
It's so good.
When Wadsworth is also like reenacting the slap, he does like the Mr. Green. He even like does he fakes the glasses. He goes,
I caught that
screaming. Yeah, it's so good.
And the telegram lady, she just shows up and then just gets immediately shot. She's like, she's just doing her fucking job. That made me laugh so hard I couldn't speak.
Blown away, dude. Blown to pieces.
Just shut the door and leave her body outside.
It's also like it's morbid, but it's also like so just like, oh fuck, like the runtime, we have to have this under 100 minutes for whatever reason. So because like all the other kills are very like drawn out. You saw like the giallo leather glove grab something. This one's just like boom, fuck you.
That's it. She gets like 3 words into her song and then done.
You made your SAG requirements, you're out.
She had her 15 seconds of fame.
If that.
We're funny.
I love that. Sweet. With the discussion, it did change a small tiny bit, but not in the number. So,
he's like, it got worse.
No. So I give this movie a 3 out of 5 toe tags.
That's solid.
Yeah. Like I said, sometimes it sounds like I'm shitting on a movie, but it's mostly me just trying to debate it with the person who loves it. Right.
Yeah.
Just for sake of, but to me, a 3 out of 5 for me is very just like, it's a movie. Like I had fun with it. I relatively enjoyed my time. 3 out of 5s. Usually I don't like rewatch a whole often. So probably a decade could go without me watching this, but we'll see. Maybe one day it'll just hit me and I'll be like, yo, I need to watch Clue now, you know? but what did change is I am adding a heart to it. Just like on Letterboxd, sometimes we'll throw that in if you have a heart on it. Cause it was a 3 without a heart. I was just like, I don't really like love it, but I think talking about it more, which usually helps, right? I'm going to tack on a heart, pin a little heart to it. Pin a heart to the 3 out of 5. So yeah.
Love that.
Not too bad. 5, 4, 3.
Happy to hear it.
Yeah. Yep. Now we just need someone who's a 2.
And then bully them to make them like it enough to get a 3. He's like, but it's a 2 with a heart. No. We got to go up.
Doesn't work. All right, guys. That was Clue from 1985, directed by Jonathan Lynn Brucker. thank you so much for hopping on, dude. Next time you're more than welcome to invite your co-host on, Orlene. It would be a super fun discussion, assuming she's willing to talk about things that we're down to cover, because we do get pretty dark around here sometimes. So
right.
But yeah, you're more than welcome. And to our listeners, you guys need to go check out Autopsy of a Horror Movie quick. You need to hit that follow button real quick, hit the subscribe button, all that stuff, because it's a really good time. If you like the in-depth discussions that Courtney and I usually have, you'll have great company in their podcast. So again, thank you, Brucker. Stoked that you showed up and came with a movie. You came with a movie, dude, for sure. It was quite a fun discussion. So do you want to plug your podcast and like your socials and stuff before we get out of here?
Yes, 100%. I just want to say thank you so much again, Jensen and Courtney. You two are awesome and super nice. In case people are listening ever wondering, yes, they are incredibly nice people.
We are not.
We were just bullying him this whole time.
I say with a gun to my forehead. But yes, thank you again. This was so much fun. I always love to you know, talk to people and just like geek out over movies, and I've been dying to talk about Clue. But yes, people can find Autopsy of a Horror Movie anywhere they find podcasts, and you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Brucker Horror. That is Brucker Horror. And yeah, come follow, hit me up, tweet at me, whatever, you know. I love discussing movies, so and thank you again. I had so much fun here.
Yeah, it was a good time, honestly, and yet again swayed my decision overall on the rating and everything. So
get you to smash that heart.
That was the plan.
Get you to smash that heart. Yeah.
A classic move. So I love that. If you guys want to follow us online, you can find us on Instagram at The Fright Crew. I guess I should have plugged my stuff first. It's Jensen Harper on Instagram and Letterboxd. You know the deets. And Courtney, you can find her on nowhere. No, I'm kidding. Little Sky Dancer on Instagram.
In the phone book.
I do not exist.
Pretty much, dude. So yeah, Little Sky Dancer on Instagram. Send her pictures of all your frogs.
Oh my God. Please don't.
Please. What? I like to tell people this. Tweet at me, no context, your favorite Clue gifts. You don't even have to say anything in the tweet. Just your favorite Clue gifts. Tweet at me.
Amazing. I'm going to send you the one of the Telegram singer getting shot.
Just fucking blasted, dude. No. Oh, shit. All right. Well, what should the listener do for us, Courtney?
They should give us and Brucker rating and review, preferably 5 stars. If they do, then we will cover The Wedding Singer 5 times in 1 month. Thank you so much.
I'm going to quit
Jensen's
tomorrow.
Like, absolutely not. No, just
once.
I refuse to edit this podcast.
I refuse everything.
Just one time, please, for the love of God. I'm on my knees begging.
I will do what I said, and I will get drunk, watch Clue, then come on and talk about The Wedding Singer.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess we're just going to have a big old party for Wedding Singer. Chanel wants to be on. Brucker wants to be on now. We got a whole thing. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll sit the fuck out. Y'all three.
No, let's do like a live stream.
You can just hang back.
Of us watching that.
Do a live stream?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me, man. Last time that happened, things went a little south for me.
You drank a freaking tall can of Natty Ice.
A Natty
and
Daddy.
Got shit face drunk. I remember.
Twerking on the internet, dude. That was somewhere out there probably. So let's not rehash those things. If
Big rattle and roll, Jensen. Hell yes.
If I were to say anything, I'm going to steal that. Shake, rattle, and roll. Stay shaking, rattling, and rolling, baby. Fuck yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.